Culinary Institute of Child Nutrition proudly welcomes you to The Mix-Up, an iBites production. I'm your host, Chef Patrick Garmong, mixing it up with culinary experts from the child nutrition community. Welcome back to The Mix-Up. This is Chef Patrick Garmong, and I am joined today by Warren DeShields. He is the food service director for the Bridgeton Public School District. Hey, welcome.
Hey, Patrick. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Before we get rolling, can you tell us a little bit about your district, where you're at, your size, and just kind of the overall outlook of what your department does for your district?
Sure, no problem. So we're in southern New Jersey, Bridgeton, New Jersey. We're about 45 minutes west of Atlantic City and about 45 minutes south of Philadelphia. So if you intersect the two, you know, we're right there. Easy to get to both places. Bridgeton is a small city. We've got about 25,000 residents. It's pretty rural. Surrounding us is a whole lot of farmland that grows wonderful produce, apples, peaches, collard greens, string beans, all kind of things that are good on a school menu.
Yeah. But,
it's a wonderful place to live. We're in New Jersey. We're in Cumberland County. And when you look at data as far as the way we are health-wise, Cumberland County is in last place as far as fat and obesity is concerned, and also in the bottom when it comes to socioeconomic status. So we do our best to make sure that our students eat at every opportunity we can. We're a CEP district. We offer breakfast, lunch, after school snack, a dinner program, the fresh fruit and vegetable program, and we also run a summer feeding program. We have 10 schools and 6,200 students right now. We're growing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're growing. Yep. We also have an early college program. I'm sorry, Patrick.
Oh, no, you're good. Wow. I was just going to say, you guys are hitting all the good programs there with USDA to keep your students nourished. That's amazing.
Yeah, we're very happy before the pandemic with the USDA, with all the programs that they offer. Our State Department of Ag is a wonderful, you know, program to work with as far as, you know, instituting all these programs that we have here in Bridgeton. So they call us a five-star program because we offer everything here.
Yeah.
But it's wonderful. I mean, you definitely, you know, can hear the need in Bridgeton to have these programs to, you know, feed the students and the community that we have. So we're happy to do it.
Yeah. Well, speaking of, you know, the pandemic and trying to operate, you know, a variety of programs, how did you guys transition to feeding students during, you know, the year and a half of, you know, the COVID lockdowns and quarantines and just this weird hybrid of some schools are open, half open, AB days. I mean, it was all over the board. How'd you guys kind of manage that?
Man, it was pretty surreal, man. We I got the call. I was in DC at the LAC conference, and my BA called me and said we were shutting down, you know, probably for a couple weeks. And I said, all right, well, you know, we'll shut down. She said, no, we still got to feed them. I'm like, okay, now my train of thought changed. Okay, how are we going to feed them, you know?
Yeah.
So you get all these thoughts going through your head, you know, well, if we're in a pandemic and we're shutting down, you know, and, you know, people can't be around each other. So I figured, I said, well, we'll just do like a summer feeding setup, you know, and go from there. So I made a call back to my central kitchen, and Charlie Brooks is the manager. And she heard it in my voice that, you know, we were shutting down and it was going to be tough times or whatever. And she says, I got it. She said, I think I know what to do. So by the time I got back from DC, she had her cafeteria all set up. You know, it was an assembly line of food. And
oh, wow.
The tables were moved out and, you know, we had pallets of food in there, you know, ready to go. And I'm like, man, I said, I didn't envision it being this way. I kind of thought we'd be in the kitchen, you know, with bags. But when you start to think about it, you know, you don't know what the, you know, participation was going to be.
Right.
So, you know, she pretty much turned, you know, the cafeteria into her storeroom, and then the other side of the cafeteria into an assembly line. We got 78 employees here. We had all 78 employees, you know, come in, and, you know, we kind of talked to them and said, look, you know, you're an essential employee. You need to be here. We're going to do our best to make sure that you're healthy. And, you know, just remember standing there looking out at them and them looking back at us, you know, kind of, you know, unsure of what was ahead of us. Yeah. You know, it was an eerie feeling, you know, and the superintendent was there and our business administrator was there. And they assured them that, you know, we do our best to make sure that we had all the PPE, you know, necessary. We worked with our mayor here in Bridgeton to make sure that, you know, we had sites. I think we did 10 total sites throughout Bridgeton, whether it was a school or a church. You know, we did our best to try to make sure that all the residents and students had an opportunity to easily, you know, attain the meals that we were putting out. And I remember, you know, it was raining one day and we were at a church over off of Broad Street, and the cars were wrapped around the corner. There were people standing in line because, you know, just to go back to it, man, I still remember that fear, you know, in the community that, you know, we weren't going to be able to get food, you know, and water and things, you know, to sustain, you know, just regular life. And I thought when it was raining, you know, parents and, you know, children would leave, but I got pictures, man. And one of the craziest things that came out of that was somebody, you know, took a look at it and says, you know, there's no social distancing going on there, you know, and it was in the beginning, like right when, you know, social distancing, it was talked about, but it wasn't really, you know, and I said, man, so that was another wrinkle we had to throw in there. You know, how can you serve all these kids, you know, in on all these meals and still social distance? So, you know, we just kept adapting to it, you know, and as the year went on, you know, into the summer, you know, things kind of calmed down, but we also, you know, got better, you know, and more efficient at what we were doing to feed the students. But, you know, in September, we quickly, you know, got back to school and we went hybrid in October.
Okay. So
that was a challenge in itself here in Bridgeton. So we had 25% of our student population in school for one day a week. So what we decided to do was when they left using the waivers, we would give them a bag with 6 days of food in it.
Okay.
So you can imagine, you know, you got breakfast, lunch, dinner, snack, 6 days worth of food. It was like 30 some pounds that this bag is.
I was picturing a little kindergartner just falling over with this big grocery bag of food.
So when I proposed it to, you know, our business administrator, she took it to, you know, their leadership team and it says, the only way we're going to, you know, be allowed to do that is if you put staff on the bus to help the students when they get off the bus to handle those meals.
Yeah.
So we work with maintenance and transportation to make sure that, you know, we can get the meals on the bus and get them off the bus with a staff member, because they're required, parents are required to have somebody there to, you know, pick the students up at the bus stop. So we carried, and I actually did it too. It was pretty cool to see, you know, you got all these kids walking down the street, you know, parents and families, and they're carrying these bags. And I thought, you know, they're not going to take it. They're just going to waste it. You know, you'll ride around town and you see these, you know, big white bags of food just sitting all over the place. But I never saw one bag. I never got a call from, you know, the mayor or people on his team saying, hey, you know, there's trash all over the place. You know, there was a real need, you know, for the food here in Bridgeton. So that made us happy that the work that we were doing, you know, was actually, you know, being taken and eaten and utilized like it should be. So,
yeah. Yeah. And on top of your staff, you know, stepping up to the plate and having to retool their program during, you know, again, these unprecedented times, I keep hearing stories around the nation of different cohorts within the district itself, bus drivers, maintenance teams, paraprofessionals, just really stepping up to help out the nutrition part department, knowing that the services that our child nutrition programs provide are so essential to students. And, you know, in communities like yours, it really is that social safety net that's so needed to make sure that children are continuously getting nourished. It's just cool how everyone comes together, and hopefully it aligns where administration kind of starts seeing child nutrition programs a little bit more inclusive in the you know, inner workings of the school district than maybe they have in the past.
Yeah, and it was good too that they made you couldn't get credit for a full day of school. if you didn't feed them. So that went a long way that, you know, if you're going to get, you know, credit for that day, you have to feed them. So that made, that's what actually made us essential.
Yeah. And
it was like, okay, now you gotta involve, you know, school nutrition in these leadership meetings. And, you know, I got invited to the return meetings about, you know, how we're going to come back to school and hybrid, you know, and things like that. So I could say, you know, the plan that you have, you know, can work as long as we can do this for, you know, the food. And the thing that I really liked that came out of it was, you know, there was some resistance, you know, from some leadership pockets on breakfast and lunch in the classroom. Uh-huh. And now secondhand, you know.
Right.
I can hear principals say, you know what? Well, I can feed them in the classroom and do this, this, and this. And I'm like, that's great. You
know? Yeah. Yeah. I finally get that aha moment where you're like, oh, it's not that bad. It's not going to be milk spilled everywhere and exactly. Cereal bowls all over the place. Like, we're getting students nourished. They're paying attention. We're, you know, yeah, it's you know, the uphill battle on breakfast in the classroom has been going on for so long. And yeah, hopefully this really does open a lot of eyes and make, you know, even those that are resistant have other administrative colleagues to say, hey, no, this is good. And they're advocating for it and pushing them to do the right thing. So yeah, that's awesome.
It is. It's been wonderful for us.
Yeah. So as you start planning this summer for next school year, how are you guys coming back in full capacity, or is that still to be determined? And
so here in New Jersey, our Governor Murphy said we're coming back 100%, no more virtual. We still have to socially distance 3 feet. So we've gone in all the cafeterias, did our measurements and try to figure out what the capacity can be for each, you know, cafeteria individually. I've met with principals to say, you know, this is how we're going to be able to feed. If we can't fit, you know, your whole, you know, school population in the amount of periods that you have, you know, you have to either add a lunch period or you're going to have to find an alternative, you know, space to eat. So in some schools, we're using, gymnasiums, media centers. We have a courtyard that we're going to outfit at our high school with. We got like 17 picnic tables with umbrellas that we're going to put out there. We're going to get a nice brand new shiny serving line out there.
There you go.
Feed the kids in. So, I mean, we're excited about that. When there's inclement weather at the high school, we'll be in the media center where we can utilize the cubicles that they have set up for what do you call it? Their computers. Our students have their own laptops now, so they don't need the computer. So we're going to get rid of them. They can eat, you know, there, and we'll have a kiosk to go in there and feed them that way. And they can also order off of an app.
Yeah.
We have NutriSlice. So they're going to order off that app to say, you know, I want, you know, Italian sub or, you know, a cheesesteak, whatever it might be that they want, you know, that we have on the menu. It'll be there for them in the library. So we're excited about that because, you know, we've been trying to get the students on the app to kind of speed the lines up in the cafeteria.
Yeah.
But, you know, now, you know, you have these seniors that'll be in the library every day. If they want to eat, you know, and they want a cheesesteak, whatever, you know, it is that they want, they're going to have to use the app. So we're excited about it.
Yeah. I'm curious about that. So is there like a cutoff time every day for them to get their lunch order in? And then is it like prepackaged or know the numbers to have on that service line or?
So by 9 o'clock every day, they're going to have to place their order. The order goes directly into the manager's office at the high school. She puts the order to the production team. If Patrick wants an Italian sub with lettuce and tomato on it, you can get Pat. Just like it would be if you go to Wawa. When Patrick comes in for his lunch period, his sub's in that landing spot for him. There you go. You got what you want.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
When I was a director, I was kind of exploring, trying to figure out some of that because our high school had one lunch period to feed 900 students.
Oh, yeah, that universal.
Yeah, so we were trying to figure out how to make that work, and I never quite got to it. So I was curious to hear how that worked out. That seems like a great way to use technology to your benefit and increase participation, hopefully, because students aren't waiting in that line.
It is. And we've had it for a while. But the tough part is, you know, the technology's there. We're set up. We're ready to go. It's just a matter of getting the students to say, I'm going to take the time to order, you know, off of this app because that's what I want. And they do it at Wawa and different places like that. I mean, I got an 18-year-old son. You know, I come home all the time and Grubhub's been to the house. you know they're doing it. They can do it.
That's but, right.
It's just, but if they want it, if they don't want to go down there, you know, to the kiosk and have, you know, limited options because there's only so much you can do on a kiosk.
Yeah.
If they want the things that are down in the cafeteria, then they're going to have to order. And it's not a punishment, you know, that they're in the library. We want to make it a great experience for them. And having that app there for them is going to give them that same feel, you know, that they would have in the cafeteria.
Yeah, absolutely. And they don't have to pay those service fees, tip, all that stuff.
Exactly. I'm sure the cheese steak they get from me isn't going to cost them what it would cost them at Grubhub.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. $5 cheese steak costs $37 with all the fees.
Yeah, yeah. And you don't have to tip.
That's right. That's right. So you have been in the child nutrition field for 21 years now.
Yeah,
you're a chef by trade when you came in. So give us a little background about your culinary experience and then how you gravitated towards child nutrition.
So I'm born and raised here in Bridgeton. I graduated from Bridgeton High School in 91. I went to culinary school. There's a culinary school called it's called Atlantic Cake now, but it was the Academy of Culinary Arts back when I went there. And I did, you know, just like most chefs do, I graduated. I worked a few different places in catering halls. And the last stop I had was at a hotel in Cherry Hill. It's about 45 minutes away from here. And Patrick, I was working from 6 a.m. to 11 o'clock at night, taking that ride back down here to Bridgeton, 45 minutes, and back again at 6 a.m. in the morning. And sometimes, you know, when we had big, big days, they say to me, they said, look, man, just, you know, take a room, you know, put your clothes out. We'll have housekeeping clean them, you know, and, you know, come right back down in the morning.
Yeah.
First couple of days, I'm like, you know, that's cool. I get a free hotel room and, you know, I can order room service and all that. But after a while, I'm like, man, I'm not seeing nobody. I'm not seeing family, friends or anything. I'm just working. So long story short, the director at the time was our director here. And she offered me a job as a cafeteria manager. And it was probably like $5,000 less than what I was making. I'm like, I can't take that pay cut. So, you know, she called me about 10 days later or whatever. And I had still been working, you know, every single day.
Yeah.
Said, you know what, man? I said, I can't do this. I said, I'm going to go check it out. So long story short, I went in as a cafeteria manager. I did that, you know, had fun with kids and realized that, you know, feeding students was my actual passion because,
right.
You know, you get that immediate response, you know, when you do banquets and things like that, yeah, your food was good, yeah, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it's done and over with, you know, when you see kids come through that line and, you know, they know you're Chef D and everything is, you know, really good because you've transformed things. And Patrick, I really changed minimal when I got to the high school, but because I was wearing a chef jacket and, you know, them crazy, you know, chef pants with, you know, jalapenos and chilies all over.
Yeah.
It was cool. But about 5 years ago, I transitioned from the assistant director to the director. And I really attribute, you know, a lot of what I've done in child nutrition to being a member of the School Nutrition Association, you know, that professional development,
right.
And the things that they've had to offer. And really in my early days too, the director at the time, Mary Ann Bodine, she had been down to the Institute of Child Nutrition. So a lot of the things that, you know, she did for us as far as professional development, we got for free from the Institute of Child Nutrition. And when I first got on, I'm looking at the website. I said, this is an extensive website and all this is free. So, you know, I got a lot of certificates and things like that, but in culinary school, you don't get, you know, child nutrition training, you know, you get restaurants, you know, I can tell you my five mother sauces.
Yeah, that's right.
I couldn't tell you what a meal pattern was, you know, coming out of culinary school. So, you know, places like, you know, the ICN and SNA have really, you know, trained me to be, you know, where I'm at, you know, today. So I appreciate that. And I like the fact that camaraderie between the organizations and associations, you know, with, you know, school nutrition has been great. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, our philosophy and our executive director, Dr. Alicia Hall Campbell, says that it's a big sandbox and there's plenty of sand to play with. We should all be working together to play in there together to keep growing the field and educating child nutrition professionals so they can do their best to, you know, nourish children. And that's really what it's all about at the end of the day, right? Is we're trying to make sure that we're putting good food in kids' bellies and, you know, helping them succeed. So, you know, at 21 years in child nutrition, there's been a lot of changes.
I tell the story back in 2010. Well, we were talking about it earlier, you know, when you come in, you're bringing in your chef recipes and trying to find out how to use, you know, USDA commodities and things. I didn't know what commodities was when I started.
Right.
I'm like, what is that? What is commodities? Yeah. I'm like, I seen the movie Trading Places where, you know, they're talking about pork bellies. And yeah. I'm like, what? We
get stocks? Stocks?
Yeah. But, you know, you find, you know, ways of using those recipes. But one of the biggest changes, of course, was in 2010 with the Healthy Hunger Free Act.
Yeah.
You know, we were selling snacks like crazy at the high school because, you know, you got those high schoolers, they got money. You know, I tell the story. I was counting ones, you know, so much at the end of the day trying to reconcile my drawer. You know, it take me at least a half hour, 45 minutes. So I purchased one of those dollar bill counters.
Yeah, there you go.
But before I got out of the box, Healthy Hunger Free Act hit. You know, we had to stop selling the snacks. And that dollar bill machine is still on the shelf in the storeroom. But, I mean, again, it's just like, I think the good part about school nutrition is we adapt, you know.
Yeah.
You look at ways of trying to adapt and change to make it, like you said, healthy food, you know, to go in the bellies of our students. And, you know, we found ways to incorporate, you know, good ingredients, you know, and recipes on the menu so we didn't have healthy trash cans, as I call it here.
Yeah, that's right.
Because if you can make it healthy all you want to, if they're not going to eat it, you know, they're not going to eat it. And at the time when it hit, we were still free, reduced, and paid. We always had a high free population. We were 93% free and reduced, but we still had those segments of students who had to pay. So, you know, I'm not paying for something that's, you know, whole grain or, you know, I don't want it. And you know, you don't want kids to feel like, well, just because you're free, you know, I'm just throwing you crap. So, you know, really had to, you know, make the presentation and the food attractive enough for them to eat. So it's always been that dance of how do you look at the regulations and start incorporating, you know, herbs and spices and things like that to, you know, cut out some of the sodium and things like that. So those changes, I think, have been wonderful for child nutrition. And I think it's really changed the perception of the way, you know, people look at, you know, that whole cafeteria food, so to speak. It's not mystery meat and things like that. And we try to do a lot of branding so they know, you know, look, you're using, you know, a Burke's hot dog or, you know, Burke's lunch meat, you know, things that they would see in the corner store, bodegas and supermarkets when they go out with their parents.
Yeah, no, I think it's really important to make sure that you're identifying things the way that it is appealing and appetizing to the students. One of the cool, I don't know if you've heard of this website. It was created by the Stanford Mind and Body Lab, and it's called Edgy Veggie Toolkit. And you can go on there and it guides you through the process of naming food items to give it a name that's not just like steamed green beans, but, you know, it could be like sizzling garlic green beans or something like that. Something that just like really resonates with your students and just kind of draws them in a little bit more. And one of the challenges I always found when putting together a menu is, you know, you basically have to get a whole month of menus on a little, you know, 8.5 by 11 to go in the backpack, you know, and you're like, how do I come up with a big flashy name? So try to keep it small there. And then on the line, give it that big, exciting name. And you know, that marketing piece is so essential to what we do.
It is. How long were you a director, Patrick?
I was a director for 4.5 years.
Okay.
Yeah, I just started on my fifth year, and then this opportunity at the Institute came up, and I was like, oh, I'm just going to randomly apply for this. Probably won't even get a phone call, and next thing you know, here I am. So
here you are.
Yeah, pretty grateful for that.
You went straight from restaurants to school nutrition, or from culinary school?
Yeah, so thanks for asking. No one's really asked my story. So I went to the Institute of Culinary Education in Manhattan.
Oh, okay.
And then went into higher ed dining on the catering side. I was there for a handful of years. Then I did contract dining service, operating the police academy for the state of Oregon for about a year.
Wow.
And then my wife and I decided my then fiance, we wanted to be closer to home, and there was a new restaurant opening. So I opened that and worked there for about 2 years. And then we got married in that time. And my wife said, you know, we'd like to have a family. I don't ever see you. So this opportunity opened with the school district. And I mean, I didn't know anything about child nutrition when I got into it, but I knew what good food was. So I just kind of made that transition. And at first I was like, oh, I'm just going to watch people cook square pizzas and just keep the budget in line. And then I just really started after I got done with that first fall of doing all the free and reduced applications, and then got into the schools and saw what we were serving and who we were serving it to. It really changed my whole perspective.
Right.
And I really became a champion of wanting to put good foods in kids' bellies, because it wasn't just, you know, you think school lunch, oh, kids just go and pay for their lunch and get it, and you know, is what it is. But when you realize you're feeding children who that may be their only meals of the day, it really changes everything you look at.
Yeah. That was huge for me too. Like when you realize that, you know, most kids aren't going to eat breakfast, you know, most kids will eat lunch if it's good. But then when you started talking to kids, and some kids, you know, said that, you know, pretty much this is all they get, you know, because they might not get another meal at the end of the day. I'm like, ooh, so we got to make sure, you know, that one meal that they are going to get is, you know, a punch, you know, for them. And they look forward to it. And going back to school this September, that's the one thing that we said with this whole pandemic. Their social and emotional, you know, well-being is important to us.
Yeah.
So we want to make sure that, because the supply chain is already going to be all over the place, it's going to be an issue, that one meal that they get has to be good. It's got to be a good cook. It's got to be consistent. It's got to be something that they can rely on. We don't want them coming down thinking, oh, we're having sloppy joes today, and it's meatloaf.
Right. You know? Yeah.
We want them to be, you know, we want to find things that we know we can source. You know, let's make sure we work with our vendors to make sure that, you know, this is what we're getting, and we get it and we cook it right, and it's there for them, because we don't want any imbalances, you know, with our students. But I'm glad. I hate to feel like I'm interviewing you.
No, hey.
I'm glad you shared it, because that was big for me too, to make sure that they had that one meal that was great.
Yeah. And I think what's so important in what you just shared was that level of consistency, right? They've lived in the most inconsistent last 18 months of their lives. And having that one reliable thing that they can count on is just going to be huge, especially coming back into the school environment. There's probably a lot of kids who are apprehensive for social reasons, for, you know, medical reasons, who knows? And just knowing that one piece of comfort is going to be consistent is absolutely huge as they come back in.
And they've been getting, you know, for the last 18 months, if they've been coming, because when we first started, we were doing about 4,500 to 5,000 meals at every distribution. So they were getting, you know, a great participation in a lot of meals. And it's, you know, dwindled down, of course, as, you know, the world opened back up. But they've been getting, you know, frozen meals, individually wrapped meals, things
right.
That, you know, as chefs, we know you can throw a pizza in there, you know, that's individually wrapped. It ain't getting crispy. It's not going to have that nice crust on, you know, on the bottom like it's supposed to. You know, we do these things in prepackaged meals. We have a packing machine that we use to do that. So they've been throwing those in the toaster oven or the oven to heat up, you know, at home. And, you know, when they're in hybrid here in school, they get it, you know, water in school. So I'm guaranteeing they can't wait to get back to, you know, that fresh cheesesteak or, you know, whatever it is that we give them, a nice taco, you know, nacho supreme, all those wonderful things that they're used to getting. I'm sure they can't wait to get back to it. So.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. And yeah, that was the hardest part I heard from so many of my colleagues in the field was, you know, they had to be able to provide food that was safe, that transported well, that, you know, they knew kids would put in their bellies, but it wasn't always the food that they wanted to be serving. And it was a really, really big challenge. And I mean, just getting back to the core of your program on the culinary side has got to be exciting for you, exciting for your staff. Mm-hmm. You know, they want to cook. They want to see that smile on the kid's face because of that piece of whatever that was served to them or that menu item, and just go, wow, yeah, this was made with love. It smells good. It tastes good.
We got to stay in touch, Patrick, because you come from a catering background like me. That's I couldn't stand on the line and do restaurant, you know, in culinary school. That was one of our classes. I think I got like a C because it was boring to me. You know, the dupe would come through and it's like, oh, man, I got to make chicken Kiev again. You know, I made it 10 times already. I'm tired of it.
Yeah.
We actually had an opportunity to cater. We do a Hall of Fame dinner. And it's the one time, you know, where we can really showcase our culinary skills. And, you know, we did a tasting menu for it was a small group. I think it was like 25 people. So we did a chef's tasting menu. And we took, you know, some items from the honorees that were their favorites and, you know, put our own twist on them. And, you know, staff was happy, you know. I want to work, you know, I want to cook, you know, they're making bechamels and, you know, veloutes and things like that. And it's like, you know, like, oh man, it's been so long. Who made that vegetarian lasagna? It was so great. So like you said, you just get excited to get back in the cooking, you know,
not
putting it in a pan or, you know, taking a frozen chicken patty and a bun and putting it through, you know, to serve or whatever. Yeah, it's going to be exciting to get back to everyday regular cooking.
No, I bet. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was kind of equated because we had in my district, we had a central kitchen was at our high school, and then our elementary schools were basically satellites. Mm-hmm. So I kind of took that catering mindset of like, okay, how do we pack, ship, and get it set up so we're running the quote unquote buffet line. So everything's fresh, everything tastes good. It doesn't feel like it's been sitting in a warming cabinet for hours on end. And I think that's a good strategy to have. And we really started using our kitchens at the satellites. We were lucky enough to have two convection ovens. So we really use those as finishing kitchens and really pumping through food at the end so that it was fresh and ready for service. And that's just a mindset that it takes a little bit to get there. I mean, it's basically batch cooking. Yep. It's just everything's prepped out, you know, and batch cooking just makes life so much easier. It makes, you know, your hallways smell good when you're cooking fresh chicken legs right there. And that seasoning's permeating down the hallway. Kids are like, oh, what's for lunch today? Not just that foil thing getting opened up and it just kind of sits there on the steam table. So, it's great.
Chef-wise, we're the same, man. When I became the assistant director, we were doing pretty much those prepackaged meals in our satellite kitchens. So my director at the time said, you know, how can you transform this? And I took the whole thing he just said. It was like, it's just a buffet, you know, you know, central, make it here, throw in a Cambro and send it out to, you know, the satellite schools, and they're going to put it on the buffet line.
Yeah.
And if it's French fries and chicken patties, they can finish it there in the convection of it. So we did the same thing, man.
Yeah. It's just a different mindset, right? I mean, when I got there, they were literally cooking everything at the central kitchen and it would leave at 10. And, you know, by the time the last lunch came through at 12:45, that thing's been sitting there for a minute. You know, that crunchy chicken sandwich is not crunchy anymore.
It ain't crunchy anymore.
That's right. Yeah.
Good stuff, man.
So you all are in a pretty big ag area, you're saying. What kind of relationships have you been able to cultivate to do some farm to school?
So it's crazy. In 2013, we actually got a planning grant to do farm to school. And I headed it up and, you know, really just did the investigation on how we could do farm to school. And pretty much at the end of it, we realized that we could actually do it ourselves and not apply for the actual, you know, farm to school grant. We had so much, you know, ag around us that we could actually do it ourselves. And I transitioned to the director, you know, not long after that. So farm school had got kind of put on the back burner. Mm-hmm. But I always kept, you know, working with our Department of Ag on, you know, what we could do and how we can get started. But it was just a matter of, you know, what to do. So we have two district nutritionists here, actually. We have one. One nutritionist is an RD. Both of them are RDs, actually. One is the assistant director and the other is our menu planner, designer. And she's also the district nutritionist. But when she came in, she has a great background on gardens and growing and things like that. So we have now gotten quite a few grants and started some programs here in the district where we have two greenhouses at our high school. And we have three gardens that we oversee at three of the elementary schools.
Oh, wow. So
we've got that going on here in the district. But as far as our menu is concerned, we work with a company out of Philadelphia called The Common Market. And it's crazy. We actually have five frozen vegetables that we put on a menu: corn, spinach, collard greens, string beans, and oh goodness, I can't think of the third one. I mean the fifth one. But they're all grown right here locally, right outside of Bridgeton.
Nice.
Yep. It actually comes into a plant that's in Bridgeton to be flash frozen and processed. It goes to Philly to the Common Market and they actually ship it back down to us to put on the menus for our kids. And the really cool thing about it is they do marketing of the farmers in the area. And we put those marketing flyers up in the lunch line. And a lot of the kids have family members who either work at those farms or at the processing place where the food is processed at. So you have that relationship again that now, you know, when I started at the high school, if we made string beans or collard greens or whatever, it was two number 10 cans, no seasoning, you know, no nothing. And it was put up on the line because it's offer versus serve. Most of the time, you know, one of those cans was going in the trash because they just weren't eating it. So we started bringing frozen stuff in to the district, you know, adding some smoked turkey to it, you know, some peppers, onions, garlic, things like that. And we quickly went from two cans up to at least five cases and we're actually eating it, you know?
Yeah.
So the kids here like vegetables because, you know, again, you know, it's how it's presented, you know, it's fresh, it's local, you know, they have that relationship with the farmers and things like that. So it's been wonderful, our farm to school journey. We talk about the fresh fruit and vegetable program. You know, we're required by our state Department of Ag to make sure that we put some local items on there. And we do. I think it's like six a month that we put on the fresh fruit and vegetable menu. So we love farm to school. We like farm to everything.
Yeah, that's right. Farm to cafeteria. That's awesome. Well, Chef, this has been amazing. I cannot thank you enough. I got to meet you during the SNA Chef Talk where we all got together and I was like, I know this is a guy who I want to chat with. So the things you've done with your district over the last 21 years are amazing. And I can't thank you and your staff enough for everything that you've done during this pandemic. And I bet you guys are just so excited to get back in the kitchen and start cooking again.
Yeah, man. And I thank you because, you know, you talk about the things that we do not here just in Bridgeton, but across the country, man. It's people like you, you know, out there telling the story that's actually going to get us, you know, more exposure, you know, that we need to make sure that, you know, school cafeterias are growing and progressing in the right way. So I thank you for the work that you're doing.
Thank you. I'm just trying to amplify your guys' voice because, yeah, like you said, people need to know what's going on out there and know that it's not just you know, just school lunch. It's good food in schools. And you all are making that happen. So thank you.
Yep. Stay in touch, man. I like this conversation. Stay in touch.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you everybody for joining us and join us next time on The Mix Up. This is Chef Patrick signing off. Join us next time as we continue to mix it up with culinary experts from the child nutrition community. I've been your host, Chef Patrick Garmong from the Culinary Institute of Child Nutrition. Hey, don't forget to wash your hands.
This project has been funded at least in part with federal funds from the U.S. Department of Agriculture Food and Nutrition Service through an agreement with the Institute of Child Nutrition at the University of Mississippi. The contents of this publication do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, nor does mention of trade names, commercial products, or organizations imply endorsement by the U.S. government. The University of Mississippi is an EEOAA Title VI, Title IX, Section 504, ADA, ADEA employer. In accordance with federal law and U.S. Department of Agriculture policy, this institution is prohibited from discriminating on the basis of race, color, national origin, sex, age, or disability. To file a complaint of discrimination, write USDA Director, Office of Civil Rights, Room 326W, Whitten Building, 1400 Independence Avenue, Southwest, Washington, D.C., 202-509-410, or call 202-720-5964. USDA is an equal opportunity provider and employer.